Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the VCR Repairman. I'm your host, Clay Fair, and alongside me is my fantastic co-host and best friend, Jacob Mueller. How are you doing today, Jacob?
Hey guys, how's it going? Hey Clay, how's this morning going for you?
It's going good. I got the vaccine on Wednesday, and I've just been feeling like incredibly lazy and dizzy since.
Clay was given COVID by the vaccine.
Yeah,
We're gonna spread some falsehoods on the no, I'm just
guys,
kidding.
don't take the
On this
vaccine.
podcast.
Don't take the
Guys, don't take the
don't take
vaccine.
the
No.
vaccine. No.
Don't listen to anything that we just said.
Yeah, no, it's totally normal to have those side effects after getting it, apparently. But it's also
Well, I
supposed
hope you
to.
feel better.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel better. It kind of sucked
That's good.
yesterday. But apparently, it's supposed to feel worse after your second dose. So, we'll see how that goes.
I'm sure that's more anecdotal than like researched, I think. So, my guess is that you just won't know until it happens, obviously.
I guess it's
But
different for
maybe you
everyone.
just had it bad on the first dose. It's possible that that was just the case.
I'm just thankful I
Some
got
people
the
never get
chance
it
to get
bad.
it this early.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great thing. I can't wait until I can get it.
Yeah, me neither, man. Then we can be
It's gonna
maskless.
be. Exactly. Well,
No.
technically, we don't know enough about the vaccine to know if it prevents us from spreading it, but
No, I was being sarcastic. You're totally right. The
okay.
vaccine does
Okay.
not exempt you from wearing a mask.
Yes, everybody continue to wear your
Everybody.
mask. Double mask if you
Double
can.
mask.
And
Oh, real quick before we launch into the show, I had a question about masks for you. So, you have a beard, right? How is wearing a mask and a beard for you? Is that like just like
There
a
are
weird
certain
feeling?
masks that bother it, but for the most part, it's pretty fine. And I've had a beard for a full year. I mean, I would call my thing or my facial hair a beard. I mean, it's not like a
It
thick beard like some guys have, but
is.
yeah, I mean, I think I'm pretty used to it, so like I don't get any bother like from the beard touching my skin. Other skin or anything, or and the masks usually don't mess with it too much, but there's sometimes it does. It for the most part it's pretty good, and I have my preferred masks and stuff like that that feel the best, right?
I only ask just because I've been trying to grow one sometimes, and it gets to the point where wearing a mask with it is so obnoxious that I just have to shave.
Yeah,
But,
no, I get that. I get that.
yeah.
I
Anyways.
think,
Oh, you.
I
I'm
or I'll, all I'll add about beards is that definitely like, if you have to give them like a month or so or something like that, or a few weeks like to grow out, because the stubble one it'll get irritable with, I guess anything that's on your face, but also just like it's irritable to like have that touch other parts of your body, right? I remember when I was just starting to grow, or like any time that I grew a little bit of stubble out, it was always really irritable, and coarse the hair, So.
Yeah, I'll give it a fair shake going forward. But anyway, enough about
Our
beards.
beards.
This week in movie news, the Golden Globe and SAG nominations got announced. So I thought that would be interesting to talk about, just to like maybe see what some front runners for award season are gonna be going forward and at the Oscars.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
I guess looking at I'm looking at the best picture for best picture and best musical comedy for the Golden Globes. They've nominated, or at least for the best drama, they've nominated The Father, Mank, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Have you seen any of those movies?
I have seen a grand total of 0 of the films.
Yeah.
I wish I could say that I've seen Trials of the Chicago 7, mainly because it's been on Netflix and available to watch for a while, but haven't watched it yet. But interested in all of them, for sure. Obviously, because we haven't seen a ton of these, we can't talk with any of experience about like what our favorites are. But looking at some general trends, especially across the globes, you know, I think just through the nominations, I believe that Mank was one of the highest nominated films at the Golden Globes. And then I was also looking at the Oscar short lists for, you know, some of the categories that they put out. They don't do this for like best picture or best actor or best actress or screenplay, but they do it for, you know, documentary categories, visual effects and stuff like that. And I noticed that Mank was included in a lot of those too. So I'm wondering, will it be like last year's Joker, or is it going to be like a front runner? Like, is it going to get a lot of nominations but not really win a ton? Or is it, you know, going to really capture Hollywood?
I think it's a weaker year overall, so it probably has a better chance of winning. I mean, we all, of course, know that these award shows love giving awards to movies about old Hollywood.
Yeah.
I've actually seen Mank and Trial of the Chicago 7, and I thought they were kind of disappointing, to be honest. I didn't really like them that much. Especially, like, if you held a gun to my head and told me to pick one, I'd probably rather rewatch Mank. I think part of the reason that movie just didn't, like, all the way connect for me is just because I haven't seen Citizen Kane, and there's supposed to be, like, a lot of parallel structure between those two. Because it's obviously about the screenwriter of Citizen Kane. And Trial of the Chicago 7.
Yeah, I watched Citizen Kane this week, actually.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a really good movie. I watched it for a film class, and I'd seen it, I think, once or twice before. I know I watched it a while back, just because it was... I'm not a person who has really gotten into old movies, and when I kind of first started to want to do that, I was just like, well, I should watch the one everyone talks about, Citizen Kane. Yeah. So yeah, I watched it back then and still like it now.
I will say the...
So I'm interested in Mank.
Yeah, I would be interested to see what your opinion is of it compared to mine, just because you have that background. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will say, the one reference I did get was the Orson Welles impersonation in the movie is spot on. It's just so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then...
from what I've seen in the trailers, that looks like it's the case.
Yeah. Obviously, Gary Oldman in that movie looks like he's getting a lot of buzz for Best Actor. And Amanda Seyfried for Best Actress. I don't really know. I don't really... I wouldn't expect either of them to win.
I don't think so either.
I think probably for Best Actor, I would say probably Chadwick Boseman is a shoo-in.
Yeah, I would say the same thing there. I mean, I think Riz was the... I guess before Ma Rainey's Black Bottom came out, Riz was one of the big contenders. And I'm sure he still is, but I think that it's pretty obvious that Chadwick Boseman is going to get it. And that's, you know, I haven't seen the movie, but from what I've heard, it's completely, completely deserved.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, it's quite sad that he died.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the movie either, but I have heard that it's one of the best performances of the year. So I'm going to, I will watch the movie at some point just for that.
Same, I think, obviously, here.
Given the circumstances of, you know, tragically he died this year, it kind of just makes it a bigger storyline, you know what I mean, for winning.
Makes his performance more than a performance.
Yeah.
In a sense, or more than just, you know, his character. You read more into everything he says, I'm sure, in that movie.
Yeah. And I... yeah. Yeah, very sad. Anthony Hopkins
But
is nominated. I don't think he will win at all.
probably not. I would have to agree with you. I've heard great things about The Father, but yeah, I really don't think anyone can win this except for Chadwick Boseman, probably. And you know, well deserved. Not
Well deserved.
that I the only performance I've seen here is Riz Ahmed, so I can't rate a ton about each of these people's performances, but from what I've heard about Chadwick's performance, completely well deserved, as we've said.
And then I thought what was interesting, looking at these nominations real quick, if we want to touch on the Best Picture, musical, or comedy, there's two things that stood out to me looking at this was one, that Hamilton is nominated, which I think we touched on this some last week, that it's really good, but I'm surprised it's nominated as a 2020 movie, just given the circumstances.
I agree.
Which
I'm
a
also
few.
just surprised because all I was gonna say is just that, you know, like the basically the same thing, like the same production got nominated for a bunch of Tonys. Like I get that they filmed it, and you know, there are certain aspects to how they filmed it that I'm sure accentuate the performances and, you know, make it something different than just what the show was. But it just kind of feels like it's kind of getting over nominated. And again, it came out in 2016, it was filmed then with the original cast. So it is odd.
Yeah, I mean, if this had been like the year, if this had been 2016, I don't think I would have any issues with it being nominated, and I would probably want it to win. Not that like anyone really cares about the Best Picture, musical, or comedy category anyway, but it just feels, and I think that would be something, we're talking about this in relation to the Oscars. I think that's something interesting is how much consideration does the Oscars give it going forward? And then also the other thing that popped out to me in this category was that Borat subsequent movie film is nominated.
I'm just looking at this and I think it might win. I mean, crazily enough, Sacha Baron Cohen's a darling. Everybody, they all love him there. And yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that it might win.
And it's got
I
like
never
a
would have said that in a normal year.
Yeah, can you imagine going back a year and saying that we think Borat might win this category?
Imagine thinking there was going to be another Borat at that
Exactly, we didn't
time.
even know there was gonna be another movie. I
I
think.
mean, not to spoil Borat, but like, I love that, like, it's literally created with the idea of like 2020 in mind. Like, Borat is in the movie, he is the case one patient of coronavirus.
Yeah, patient zero. I think that might be
Patient zero.
interesting, though. It's just like, this is probably, I can't think of any other movie here that responds to the circumstances of 2020 in the same way that Borat does. And that would
I
be,
agree.
obviously, we'll never know why a certain movie was picked over another, but maybe that's something that gives it a leg up in the eyes of the critics in this insane year. Are there any other categories you think would be interesting to talk about?
I think mainly what I'd like to talk about is just a couple of snubs that I saw, at least in the Golden Globes, that the SAGs put in. And again, this is not reflecting, you know, my knowledge about each of these movies. I didn't see a lot of movies in tw of 2020 movies in 2020, but I'm noticing that the SAGs nominated Defy Bloods for outstanding performance by cast in a motion picture. I don't think the Globes gave Defy Bloods anything, which is a little bit of I would consider a snub. What else? Steven Yeun for Minari.
Yeah, I was gonna say there seems to be a little more consideration for Minari overall in the SAG Awards compared to the Golden Globes.
Agreed. Agreed. The fact that Maria Bakalova, sorry, I wanna
Yeah.
make or pronounce her name right, is nominated in both the SAGs and the Golden Globes, and she's nominated along with drama actresses
And
in the Globe or in the SAG Awards is quite
yeah,
interesting as well.
having Borat be one of the few movies I've actually seen this year, I really want her to win. I don't know if she has a chance, like coming up against like, what she's coming up against in this. I'm looking at the SAGs here, like Glenn Close and Olivia Colman.
Yeah, no,
But
I don't think
she
so
gave,
either.
and this is sounding so funny, talking about Borat too. But her performance
Right.
in that movie was genuinely amazing. It was so good.
Yeah, I agree.
I think she probably has a better chance in the Golden Globes just because it's got that comedy or musical like modifier attached to it rather than just straight up like best supporting actress. But
Yeah.
we'll see.
Another thing I'm noticing, Chadwick Boseman double nominated, also nominated for Defy Bloods for the SAGs. And I've heard as many great things about his performance in that as I have for Ma Rainey's. He had a, in terms of the acting that he produced that came out this year, pretty phenomenal.
And I will add about that performance really quick because I actually have seen Defy Bloods. It's the circumstances of that performance with what has happened in real life are kind of amazing. I don't know how much you know about his role in the movie, but he plays like, so the movie's about this like squad of Vietnam soldiers who are going back to Vietnam after many years to try to reclaim some gold. And Chadwick Boseman plays like their lieutenant who died during the Vietnam War. So they're thinking back and remembering his memory, and he plays this kind of omnipresent role in the movie where he's not ever really there, but he's always there at the same time. And I think that is a performance that, obviously, as we touched on, given the tragic circumstances, I think it's going to be even more powerful for a lot of people.
That it seems exactly like that based on the way you're describing it. Yeah, I can't wait to watch both of those movies. Obviously, they're on my list. There's a ton of movies on my list, and obviously, you and I are going to talk more about what movies we're going to be watching in the coming weeks. But those are definitely on the list for me. I know you've seen Defy Blood, so maybe that won't be one we talk about, but I would not object to Ma Rainey's being one that we talk
Oh,
about for sure in the future.
no, totally.
But I think we should probably move to the next topic
Yeah, you're right,
just
you're right.
because
Save some
we
time.
can have more discussions about awards season as it
As,
comes closer.
yeah.
And we can elongate discussions, but we got other things to talk about.
You're right.
So
So
let's do that.
briefly, I think this wasn't in our original plans for what we wanted to discuss this week, but we can touch on this really briefly. Gina Carano has been fired by Disney. Quick thoughts on
Right.
that.
Quick thoughts. I mean, I'm on Disney's side about it. I think what she said is pretty damn anti-Semitic. And, sure, she has the freedom of speech to say what she wants, but Disney has every right to fire her for saying that. I've watched one season of The Mandalorian, so obviously I've seen her in the show. I don't know what role she plays in season two, but I know she's essential to the show, and I'm sure that's a loss for the show. But you can't equate the way that conservatives are getting their feelings hurt about what's going on in America today with Jews being locked up and killed, 6 million of them in the Holocaust. I just don't think you can equate that or analogize that and, not receive consequences. And her consequences aren't that she's gonna go to jail or anything. It's simply the fact that she just won't be working with Disney anymore. And she can get other jobs. It's not like again, it's not like she's going to jail. She's not being silenced. Disney just doesn't want to work with her anymore.
And
And she
let's.
has a role. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, let's be clear, she's not being fired for voicing conservative opinions. Like she
No.
wasn't fired because she said like, oh, I think we should lower taxes or something like that. She
No.
made, abhorrent statement equating being a conservative to being a Jew in the Holocaust, which in my
Right.
opinion is like softcore Holocaust denial. Because like, if
Yeah,
you
it
genuinely
is. It
think
is.
those are equivalent
Did we
circumstances,
watch the
like
same video?
we might have.
I
We
was
might
gonna
have.
say, yeah, because I was, also after forming my own opinion about it, also looking to, others' opinions about it, and
Yeah.
I'm thinking that we might have watched the same
We
video,
probably did.
because yeah, I mean, it's true,
Yeah.
it's probably true,
And she's also
that,
incredibly transphobic online. And like
yeah.
I understand that she has an important role in the show, and that she it looks like Disney had plans for her going forward with the whole Rangers of the New Republic show. I have to
Right.
say, I don't think she's the greatest actor. I think you can probably just recast that character and it'll be fine moving forward. But in my opinion, like making it so that her viewpoints are not socially acceptable is more important to me than her being able to continue on another job.
Right, and just talking a little bit about like the corporate side of it, like The Mandalorian is Disney Plus, especially is prized property. And I think that to them, it's really important that people don't stop watching Disney Plus simply because Gina has said, these abhorrent things. And if The Mandalorian's bringing people to Disney Plus, then they want an inclusive environment that, certainly doesn't have people that they don't, cast people and pay money to people who are, being transphobic or stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say neither of us are big Disney stans. Like, I don't think we really
No.
usually support Disney all that much, but I think they did the right thing here.
Yeah, and it's in their interest to do so in many different ways, whether I like them or not.
Speaking of Disney Plus,
Yes.
how have you been keeping up with, and I think we've seen The Mandalorian clearly as like the number one property, but we're getting more now with WandaVision, which has been coming out, and I think that's
Right.
growing into something that's been important for a lot of people. How have you been keeping up with the show, and what are your thoughts on it?
So, been watching it every Friday. Slavishly devoted to WandaVision, sadly. But I do like it. I think it's a really good show generally. I've become more interested in the last couple of weeks, mainly because of some fan theories about the show and actually, realizing a lot of the little details that the directors and the writers have included and the production designers have included in various aspects of the show. And it's made me more interested. I will say I did kind of briefly touching on the new episode. We don't have to talk too much about it in spoiler talk or anything, but I do think that while it was clearly a good episode, and I think I liked the homage to like the Malcolm in the Middle type stuff, shows of the early 2000s. I thought that was really fun, but I think it kind of doubled down on the on some of the narratives it presented earlier, like Wanda's in charge of all of this, or there's a lot of theories about Agnes, Catherine Hahn's character, and I think it kind of doubled down on the theory that she's just a regular person or something like that. And I think maybe it's possible some fans might be disappointed by that. And I think the doors are still open for them to, pull off a twist or something like that. But I don't know. I would like to see it unravel a little bit more in this last episode. But I liked it generally.
That's interesting that you say that about Agnes, because I haven't really been keeping up overall with like fan theories on the internet, just 'cause I've been so busy I haven't had the time to. But that's super interesting to me that you say that people have had theories about her maybe being someone larger in the MCU. I guess not being exposed to those, I just always assumed she was a normal person. But that's interesting that there's that kind of level of depth and thought to it going on. I
Yeah, and
wish.
I think a lot of it comes from some of the stories that, WandaVision is similar to in the comics. Also kind of the way that costume designers dress her, some of the little storylines that happen, they basically connected her to a comic book character. And I think the whole little scene today of her like turning into some regular person who knew who the Avengers were probably would tend to make those people who thought that she was some big fancy comic book character doubt their theory about that a little bit. And I think that's kind of what this episode might have done for people. I don't know. But that's kind of the impression I got.
Well, potentially, and a
Although
lot
I
of,
will say, oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say potentially, and I'm gonna try to do this without spoiling as much as possible for people who might not have seen the show yet. But there are circumstances within the show where I'm guessing people think she's supposed to be like a superpowered character. I think there are probably circumstances within the show that could allow. I genuinely don't know who she's supposed to be, or who people thought she was, but. There are definitely circumstances in this show that would allow her to become one of those larger than life characters, I think. So maybe she hasn't been up to this point, but going forward, I definitely think she could be.
Yeah, I think one of the general I mean, I'm not gonna like go into depth about it, but basically just that like Wanda's not the one controlling all of this. So someone's controlling Wanda, or that there's some larger force at play, some larger, Marvel comic book villain. And I still think that there's a good chance of that, and I only say that because clearly Wanda has a lot of power over this or Westview, isn't that what it's called?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's Westview.
But at the same time, like, there's just some little story pieces that don't tie up. Like, how does she not know, like, how she created it? Like, to me, that's a really interesting story point. Like, did she just basically, like, amnesia herself to forget that? Or was she manipulated in some way? I don't know.
I will say like of like the show at large has really surprised me honestly because when I first heard about WandaVision I could not care less. I was yeah I didn't I thought it was gonna be terrible, and watching it, it's I think been one of the most interesting and creative Marvel projects in a while.
I
It
completely agree with
it's
you.
been so surprising but so welcome. I love the sitcom aspects of the show and how it changes
Me
through the
too.
decades. I think the homages on there are really smart, and I think they've added a lot of characterization to both Wanda and Vision that has made those characters, I think, not only more, way more interesting prospects for the future, but I think even like retroactively makes them look better in previous movies now that you know it's building up to this. And I'm excited to see what the conclusions for those characters in particular are, because I think like adding that depth to them is something that the other movies didn't do, and it's been really interesting because the show's almost just a case study on Wanda and Vision and the circumstances that have led them to be the way they are and how that would emotionally affect them, and I think that's so interesting. Although I will say real briefly, and I'll pass it back
Go
to
ahead.
you, there are aspects of the show that I'm not the biggest fan of. Like, I don't think it's a big spoil. I think this has been everywhere, so mini spoiler right here. But Jimmy Woo and Monica Rambeau and Kat Kat Dennings, I can't remember Kat Dennings' character's name, but they also play a role in the show, and they kind of have this parallel storyline to the WandaVision one. And I think
Well, I
that's
think that's
not
just your
interesting to me.
hatred for Ant-Man and the Wasp talking there.
It could very well be Jimmy Woo gives me PTSD, but I think it's not only is it a lot less interesting, I think like it's so funny for a show that's like so well constructed. I think it kind of looks terrible in comparison to the sitcom scenes when you move into those other scenes.
I think they're both necessary. I mean, I think actually I don't have much of a problem with Rambo or Kat Dennings or Jimmy Woo. I think the main person I have a problem with, and it's mainly just because I don't understand, is the head of S.W.O.R.D., Hayward, I think is his name.
Yeah, Hayward.
And he just seems like this cartoon carving, just created villain, like that they're trying to just make the bad guy. And I really don't want him to end up being the big force of evil. I don't think he is. It's just too telegraphed.
Yeah,
My
it's probably
only
a red
hope
herring.
is that WandaVision doesn't end in a really telegraphed fashion. Like, I want most of their what's going on to have been a little bit of red herrings. Like, that it's all Wanda. Like, she's the big, like, the two big bad forces against each other are the hating forces of Wanda hates Hayward and Hayward hates Wanda or something like that, Like, I feel like that's what they're telegraphing at the moment, but if it ended like that, I think I'd be kind of disappointed.
I think they
But
should
what I
touch.
will say about
Oh,
the show. Oh, go ahead.
no, you go. You can finish your statement. I'm sorry.
Oh, the only thing I was going to add is just that, like, one thing that I do like about the show is it, again, it, just seeing a lot of the details in the show emphasizes to me that this show has been planned out. Like, that, like, this is all part of this larger story and is going to end up connecting to future MCU movies. And, like, this was, I mean, I don't know if they knew the entire story of this before they, were filming some of the latter MCU movies before this. But again, it all ends up connecting really well. There's so few, I guess, not plot holes, but, like, universe holes in the sense that, like, they make everything mesh really well.
And say what you will about these big extended universes, I think there's genuine critiques you can make of them and genuine like reasons to support and love them. But coming from rewatching Rise of Skywalker last week to this, it's
Yes.
like the difference is night and day when you can tell that a property has been like genuinely thought through of how it's going to connect into
Right.
this world. Because if you're gonna do that, and you don't make everything connect, like, what's the point? Like, it just doesn't work.
I'm completely with you there. I think that that's a really good connection to draw. It's so clear to me that the MCU generally has just been very well planned out, and it's so clear that for, a grand total of three movies, that sequel trilogy was absolutely not planned out in any way, shape, or form.
I think other than The Rise of Skywalker, like I know you and I both really like, or at least I really like The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi individually. We just feel as though they don't fit together as a trilogy, which kind of worsens them overall. Meanwhile, here we have, I'm not the biggest fan of Marvel products. Like you meant, I hate Ant-Man and the Wasp, but when you take everything in its totality, I think the MCU generally is greater than the sum of its parts. It all combines to make something larger. And I think you saw that in Endgame, which I think I responded to more positively than I originally thought I would. But
I mean, I
yeah.
think the fact that those big movies with all of the characters that they've introduced works, they all work really well, and they're pretty good movies, whether they're your favorites or not, I think says something about the fact that they've just constructed a universe really well and just set up the pieces, right? They just continue to set up the pieces set up the story points that, you know, eventually make sense in the future. And I think that that's what you kind of have to do. And I don't think Star Wars did as good of a job with that. But I know we'll talk more about WandaVision as time goes by, and we'll, you know, probably mention the series in totality once it finishes.
Yeah. So I think we're ready to move on to our main discussion of the week.
Agreed.
Jacob and I, and hopefully anyone who might be listening to it, I don't know how many listeners we have, probably not very many of you guys, we watched The Sound of Metal for this week, which I think was surprisingly good for me. Would you like to give kind of your opening
general thoughts? Sure, sure. I don't usually, like, write about movies after I watch them, other than, like, a Letterboxd review, but I, like, actually, like, wrote some stuff down about, like, what it made me think about, which says something about, like, how much I like the movie. I'm not gonna say it was, like, a perfect movie, but I definitely really, really liked it. There's so much to think about. There's kind of a Zen aspect to it, too, which I loved. And again, there's a tie-in to addiction, which I found really interesting. And the whole idea that this is more and again, we don't have to spoil it too much for anyone who wants to see it, but there's a part in the film where Joe, one of the basically a character who leads a deaf community, where he says we don't fix the hearing, the ears, we fix, you know, what's going on in the mind. And I just thought that was so interesting, and the way he connects that to addiction. Like, they basically have a deaf AA circle.
Yeah.
Even though it's not necessarily AA, I thought it was so interesting, like, basically making this connection of the addiction to hearing, in a sense. Like, we're addicted to this thing that we think we're entitled to, which is our hearing, our senses. And, you know, when we lose it, we feel like we're losing some drug.
Yeah, I think it's in our minds. I think those characters add a really interesting perspective to the movie that I think is also genuinely worthy of criticism, but they come to the main character played fantastically by Riz Ahmed with this perspective of being deaf is not a handicap. That it's something that can happen to you, but it's not necessarily going to, it shouldn't be something that ruins your life. And I think there's so much value to that perspective and that positive outlook. But I think it's interesting that the move, because when he goes to this community, you think it's going to be some, like, I guess, I don't know the word to use, like, it's going to be like a Garden of Eden, and just, like, it's going to fix all of his problems, and he's going to find a place where he feels at home and is welcome. And I think it's interesting that the movie doesn't really go that route, and it, you know, it kind of has these characters ultimately, like, even though that they have this positive outlook that does have a great, like, benefit towards Riz Ahmed's character in the end, there's a disagreement between the two over, you know, how you should be able to live when you're deaf. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. It's, I think it's a really interesting thing to point out. There's that whole scene, kind of towards the end of the film that basically is just about how it's very central to the community that, again, they don't view being deaf as a handicap, and his actions of basically getting hearing implants, you know, saving up, kind of not saving up money, but, you know, basically trading away his assets and his, in aspects of his old life to get these hearing implants, which, you know, again, give him back that hearing, in some form. Again, it's not the same in the way that he thinks it might be initially, but you know, that choice that he makes to get the hearing back in some form is goes against the pillars of what that community sets up. And, you know, I think the movie does a really good job of not making a moral judgment on that.
Yeah.
And just saying this was Ruben is his character's name in the film. This was Ruben's choice, and this is Joe's, and this is Joe's philosophy, and you don't have to judge either of them.
And I
think there is a little bit of a... Go ahead.
I was just saying, I will say in the moment, I was definitely judging Joe, because to... Mm-hmm. Even though, I guess you could say, Ruben, like, violated the rules of this community by getting hearing aids, which thus suggests that, you know, he wanted to fix his deafness, I think it was incredibly harsh of Joe... Joe's reaction, where he basically just makes him live on the street for a few weeks until Riz can find a better situation. And I think, but I appreciate that about the movie, because it doesn't sugarcoat his problems. It kind of, oh my god, I just lost my train of thought.
Right.
Totally dropped what I was going to say. Yeah, that's gone.
I can add in just a little bit on what I was thinking, and I did make a little comment about it not, especially in that scene, it doesn't implicate like the film or the creator's morality in that scene necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely felt the same way, in the sense that I felt tugs on both sides. I completely understood why Joe would say that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also completely understood the terribleness of just putting a guy on the streets who, I mean, has just been having
the worst time
just throughout the course of the movie. Some of the, like, as someone who said he was addicted to heroin 4 years prior, like putting the addict in all of the situations to create more addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the immediate thing I thought. It's just like, is he gonna go down the drain after Joe kicks him out? But the whole morality of that scene, I think the end of the movie kind of does kind of take a stance, in the sense that basically in the last scene of the film, Riz Ahmed, who's been, you know, struggling with the just the inability to hear anything coherently or clearly in the hearing aids, and kind of just the incessant noise that comes into his ears because of them, you know, uncontrollable noise, just takes him out and sits in silence. And in the sense, that was, you know, like what Joe was saying in that scene that they have towards the end of the movie, where he's basically like, basically there's a room that Riz Ahmed goes into to sit and write or sit in silence, as something that Joe kind of instructs him to do while he's living in the community. And Joe basically says something like, you know, did you ever really sit? Did you ever really just sit in the silence and cherish that silence? And I think that's kind of what, you know, Ruben does at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. It definitely ties back in wonderfully. That's at the end of the movie, because that's totally what he does. And it's kind of the struggle of Ruben as a character, I thought, was he was someone that was thrust into a perilous set of circumstances and was forced to adjust rapidly, but at the same time, he's someone who is desperately trying to get back to the past and the life he had before. And I think, you know, Joe and the teachings of stillness are kind of, they kind of symbolize this idea of moving forward and accepting what you are and getting on with your life. And kind of that's what happens to Ruben at the end of the movie, where he, you know, he splits with his girlfriend and he's finally now ready to move on with his life and do the next thing, do something new. And I think that reincorporating that, like, lesson of stillness was, like, a really beautiful way kind of to visually show the conclusion to that, you know, inner conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's, you know, a purposefulness in some of the final shots of the film. They're not like moving cameras panning across Paris, which is the city that he's in at the end of the film. They are still shots. They're still shots of where he's looking and kind of, and I mean, one thing I will say just about the movie real quick is that the sound mixing is pretty phenomenal.
It's so good.
Throughout. And especially at the end, I mean, it is dead, dead silent. And it's just those still shots. And when the movie ends, I mean, it was just like I'd been sucked into the TV, and then I just got, you know, sucked right back out. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of beauty in that movie, and I think, you know, I'm going to mention addiction, but also just, like, the idea of codependency and dependency on a lot of things. And, like, the story with Lou, I think, is really good and interesting as well. You know, I think what's kind of clear really early on is, like, they're each other's reasons that the other one's clean, which, you know, one would... Just knowing, you know, I have some family that have an AA background, and that's kind of not usually part of someone's recovery. It's not necessarily a healthy part to, you know, depend on another person for your recovery. And I think part of, you know, Ruben's journey in the movie is to recognize that, like, his recovery can only kind of be achieved with him letting go of her in some form or fashion, or just not attaching to her. And I think he realizes that by the end of the film. And I think they both acknowledge that they're integral to each other, but that you know, they have to move on.
And it's kind of a bittersweet ending because, you know, they are... You know, like you said, they're each other's reasons for being clean, and it's clear that they have a very strong relationship to one another. But by the end of the movie, it's just kind of clear that, you know, Lou has gone her way down life, and she's really not the same person that Ruben knew before he had to leave to go to Joe's community. And I think the movie does a good job of showing kind of a disconnect between the two and suggesting that, yeah, like, you guys are very important to each other and you're always going to be important, but it's also time to move on. And that's something that's, it made me kind of mad at first. I was like, why do they have to break up? But then you think about it more and it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. It made so much sense to me while watching it. And I think one of the important things to know is, like, I think right as she's introduced, you look at her and, like, you see a new woman, right?
Yeah.
Clearly that there's a, you know, specific choice in changing up her hairstyle.
And the eyebrows.
Her eyebrows, too. And, you know, all that stuff. And I think part of all of that is, like, Riz finally accepting that he is also a new person and that he's changed and that he has support systems that aren't her, right? Or he has, you know, like, coming to some form of acceptance of himself and, you know, who he is. And I think one of the reasons, you know, maybe not that they weren't going to work, is just they were different people than they were when they were together. And they were trying to reach back to recreate something of old, right? He was trying to act like he could hear normally and like he could be the same person that he was before. But she was different, and I think that helped him also recognize I'm different and I'm not the person I was before, and I can accept that.
And reaching, this is kind of I'm kind of going to bring a change to the discussion here, but you mentioned earlier the like sound mixing and sound design. And I think that does a really good job of, I think this movie does a lot of things and it does a lot of things really well. I think we've mentioned a lot, like, its ability to have these, like, peaceful Zen moments that are really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think equally so, it's able to kind of, like, make moments of horror, like,
Yeah.
For me, like when he started to lose his hearing and the sounds that were associated with that and kind of like just droning and not being able to make out anything were in a way like horrifying. They felt like scenes out of a horror movie. And I love that the movie tonally is able to bounce between kind of those two extremes, but and you know that's something that usually is criticized, but I think it handles it really well.
Yeah, I think it does a lot of super interesting things with sound. I think, we get a lot of soundless scenes from his perspective, but then sometimes it'll follow that up by like a really abrupt cut, and then we're back in, an unobtrusive viewer's perspective, hearing everything again. And it'll like sometimes that's even super jarring for me, just because, the mix is so low at times, and then it just jumps up rapidly. It does. There's a lot of like little horrors that it creates, a little feelings of unease, and I think that's really like one of the things you're supposed to feel throughout the movie. Like, I think one of the things that the movie made me think is like, man, I am lucky to be able to hear. Like, just like the simple fact of that, like how uneasy, how bothersome would it feel, especially during your life, to lose that hearing that you've become so, dependent on.
Yeah, it made me want to, like, the movie genuinely made me never want to, like, drive around in my car and blare music ever again. Because
Yeah.
that experience looks so, it made it look terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And I think
It did.
even more so than just the sound design, I think we haven't really talked about this, which is surprising because I think this is probably the main draw of the movie. I think that's also sold excellently by Riz Ahmed himself, who, I've seen him obviously in Star Wars and in The Sisters Brothers, which he was good in both, but I did not know that I genuinely did not think that he could pull off this type of performance because he's excellent. He's so good.
He's phenomenal. He's great. Yeah, I completely agree with you in the sense that I didn't think he could pull off this type of performance. I knew he was a great actor. I've seen Nightcrawler, which he's also in. He's pretty darn good in that too. Again, it's a supporting role, and he's not the crazy one in a sense, like in that movie. So he's not the one who's really given the range to act. That's Jake Gyllenhaal, of course. He's given that range to act. But yeah, he's phenomenal in this. And one thing I'll say, just generally, like the performance is great, but I think what I really appreciate about the movie is part of me does think that another great actor could have gotten in there and the movie would have been comparably as interesting and as well done. And that says nothing bad about Riz Ahmed's performance, but I just think it says something really great about the movie in the sense that like it's got so much there. It's such an interesting and unique story. It's got a lot of unique topics to address as well. And I think he just fits the role so perfectly.
And
He fits the character they created.
there's part of me that is glad that Or not all of me is glad that Riz Ahmed got the role, not just
Me too.
because I think he deserved it, but you mentioned like maybe another actor being able to do this part just as well. And while I think you're right, I think there's might be an aspect of like celebrity that would kind of take away from the role. I don't know if that makes any sense,
Yeah.
but I feel like
No,
obviously
I agree with you.
Riz Ahmed, people know who he is, but he's not like a Brad Pitt or something like that. I don't know, that's the first name that came to my head. But I think there's kind of that, like, I don't want to say lack of star power, but, like, he's not an A-lister. And I think that kind of adds to the performance just by it's less distracting.
Yeah, and I mean, I do want to address, like, I'm not saying he's bad in the movie. I know you're not saying that I'm saying that either, but I do want to, like, I just think the point is that I'm trying to make, there is so much there In the movie. There's so many things. This would be a great movie, no matter who performed as that character. It's really great. His
Yeah,
performance
I
is
totally agree with
really
what you
phenomenal,
said.
and there's so many intricacies to his performance, and obviously, like, out of the ones I've seen, it's the best one I've seen this year.
It's very
But
well
yeah,
written
I
and
just think
directed too.
it's a really good movie. It's just a really good movie in general, is the main point I want to make there.
I kind of expected it because I had heard a lot of buzz about the performance, so I kind of just expected it to be solely focused around that, but I think you're right in that there's a lot more going on for it. Like, I thought in particular, like, the directing and the look of the movie were pretty darn good. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be at the level of quality that was at. I'm not familiar with the director of that movie. I kind of looked into him and he hasn't really done much else, but I think he did a fantastic job as well. Let me see if I can find who. I don't remember his
Yeah,
name.
Darius Marder.
Yes,
Dar
that's it.
Darius Marder is the director, and he co-wrote it as well. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's really good. It's just like that's pretty simple. It's a really good movie, and it's quite interesting. I do think the casting is really well done because, I mean, for the most part, none of these actors are mainstream. Riz is
Biggest,
somewhat
probably.
mainstream, but he's not the biggest actor, and I think that clearly to me just adds a lot of realism to an already like real and scary topic. And again, it's just like just the fact that this story is being told. I was watching the movie and just thinking like, how do we not hear about more stories like this? Why aren't there? And you know, maybe that is a little bit ignorant of me, just not thinking about that all the time, but it really makes you think about, what people who have never been excluded from anything think, inclusion is.
And real
And
briefly, just
yeah,
because
stuff
we're
like that.
running short on time, I think there, while this is about a specific situation about a person losing his hearing who's an addict, I think the overall story of being thrust into a really scary situation with dire circumstances in which you're not really sure what to do and you can't return to your normal life is something that everyone on planet Earth has experienced in the past year.
Yes.
And I hate like the argument that like the timing makes the movie, and I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I think there's a level of relatability given COVID that while the circumstances aren't the same, it's like kind of sort of the feelings that he goes through are, I think, relatable for most people.
Yeah, it's 100%. I didn't even think about that a lot, but I wrote a little bit about it, and again, I just kept mentioning the word like losing your the things you're dependable about. Like that's just or you're dependent on. I think that's a big theme in the movie, and I think that's so true in the sense of a lot of people have lost people or things or experiences that they were dependent on to feel some greater purpose in life or to feel like they were at least, even doing the bare minimum. And I know that's caused, some kind of like a crisis of, mental health for a lot of people over the pandemic. So obviously, it is poignant right now, for sure.
And sadly, I have to say that we are at 59 minutes right now. So we are just
So
about
we gotta wrap it
out of
up.
time. Yeah, Jacob, thank you for joining me today. Anyone out there listening, thank you for sitting there and listening to us ramble on. We appreciate it a lot. I think next week we plan on talking about Akira Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress, which is on HBO Max, if anyone wants to go ahead and watch that and be able to participate in the discussion mentally with us. I think that'd be cool. But yeah, thank you for listening to episode 2 of the VCR Repairman, everyone, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys.